thank you all for coming to join us in this actually very, very special event for us, at least, because we haven't really done anything big for Azure in Canada. So this is actually one of the kickoff events that you're going to see us do. We're going to be doing a whole bunch of stuff throughout the year. Of course, this is the pilot event for that, so thank you guys all for coming. For those of you guys online, thanks for joining us. We are doing this live, so if you have questions, by all means, let us know. We have people monitoring the chat. They're actually going to relay those questions back to us. We will answer them live for you. For those of you guys in the room, there are plenty of people that are dressed in white, like me, or in gray shirts. If you have questions or problems or need anything, by all means, just flag one of us down. We're here to help you, so let us know. Wireless information is on the screen for you. You can connect to the wireless access point to get your internet access. And really, I don't want to talk too much, just because you guys actually came here to see the good stuff, right? So without further ado, I want to introduce to you our first speaker, straight actually from the not as sunny as Toronto Redmond, straight from Microsoft headquarters, James Connard, and his team will be here. James, stage is all yours. Enjoy. Guys, have a great time today.
Switch over to the right machine here and we'll get started. Great. Well, thank you. I'm excited to be here today and talk to you about Windows Azure. So actually, speaking of the weather, it's actually a lot hotter here than I expected. In Seattle, we've gone through a few nice months of sunny weather, 70 degrees Fahrenheit, and now it's all rain and just ugliness in the Seattle area. So it's nice to be here and have a nice hot walk from one hotel to another and get here in Toronto. Been a while since I've been in Toronto. Actually, the last time I was here was for an event for SQL Server. So it's probably been 5 or 6 years ago. And a lot has happened in that time. You probably saw a little bit of my profile information up at the screen as you were walking in on the rotation slides. Give you a little background about myself. I lead the Azure evangelism team for Microsoft on a worldwide basis. So I have a team of evangelists that focus on all the variety of different services for Windows Azure. And what we do is we work very closely with a lot of developers early on through different releases of Windows Azure. I've actually been doing that for coming up on 5 years. And some of you who may be familiar with Windows Azure may be thinking, Windows Azure has been around for 5 years? We actually got started on a lot of our cloud efforts and our platform efforts with Azure a long time ago. And they originated from a lot of the investments that we have through some of our Microsoft properties today. And it's been an interesting journey to get some feedback from customers, start exposing new features, new services, and starting to see some interesting solutions that people are building on top of Windows Azure today. And I'm sure many of you have come to some previous Azure events and have even dabbled or started building out applications on Windows Azure. So about 2 years ago, we actually took Windows Azure commercial and made it publicly available where you could go run those applications. And even since then, we've released a number of new features, new services, new enhancements on top of Windows Azure. However, just a couple weeks ago, with the June update for Windows Azure, we actually announced the most significant release and new set of updates ever. With this June release, we're really opening up Windows Azure to a much broader set of developers and even bringing on some of our IT pro friends and allowing them to also participate in using some of the Azure services. What you'll see in some of the demos here is that we're really going to make Windows Azure be a platform for you to go run those next generation style applications. So I'm really excited to be here today and talk to you about what we're doing with this this June update. So as you look at Windows Azure, there's a few core principles that we've wanted to focus on with this release and moving forward. One of them is to make sure that we provide a really flexible platform for running cloud applications. Windows Azure really kind of pioneered the concept of platform as a service, having some turnkey services that developers could go and use and not have to worry about the underlying infrastructure, but instead just focusing on building applications. What we're doing with this June release is actually providing a richer set of capabilities to some of those services. What we're also doing is expanding the platform of service capabilities to include what the industry refers to as infrastructure as a service. allowing you to get more direct access to the underlying virtual machines, network, and the infrastructure that is available in the cloud, and really opening up all types of new scenarios for using Windows Azure as well. That includes running things like Windows Server VMs, as well as Linux-based VMs. And so I imagine most of you are probably looking at me like, did you just say Linux at a Microsoft event? Yeah, what we're actually doing is we're fundamentally embracing open source in a very new way through Windows Azure. And you'll see that introduced through several of the different demos. You'll also see that we're taking a lot of the things that we have through SDKs and tools and making those available as open source, making them available as open source under common industry licenses, Apache 2, and making that source code available in forums and places where you as developers would go, like GitHub, for example, and allowing you to actively participate in seeing that source code, reviewing that source code, and even submitting back contributions. So embracing open source in a fundamental new way. What we believe is that we're really going to have an offering in the cloud that's going to allow you to go have a lot of flexibility to go run these next generation applications. And of course, with that, we need to make sure we have a solid offering that you can rely on as well. As some of you may know, with Windows Azure, Microsoft runs a number of different data centers that are available for you to go run your code and your applications. There are actually 8 data centers that we use today worldwide where we have a Microsoft data center footprint. What I mean by that is that we operate the data centers, we operate the infrastructure, we monitor the servers, we have world-class environments where we're actually locking down those environments and operating those for you. In addition to those 8 data centers for running common services like compute and storage, we also have over 24 different nodes worldwide that we use as part of our content delivery network. That's a content delivery network that's available to you to start consuming. That's also the CDN backbone that we use for common Microsoft services that everyone worldwide depends on. Things like Windows Update, as an example. In addition to the global footprint, what we're doing with Windows Azure is making sure that we have a platform that you can rely on. And with the Windows Azure services, you'll see that we have an SLA that is supported with 99.95% SLA across those services. And so that's really important as you start thinking about building those next generation applications, is having that access to that reliable platform. We also want to just embrace the fundamental aspect of the cloud of paying for what you use. So you can get started quickly, get started without a significant investment, and then scale up those applications or scale down them as necessary, depending on the types of patterns that you're trying to address in the cloud. I imagine many of you have started looking at how you can start embracing the cloud for a variety of those type of workloads today. So with that, instead of spending more time on slides, what I actually want to do is just jump straight into a demo and start walking you through some of the new features that are included in this June release of Windows Azure. Sound good? So let me flip over here to my demo machine. And I apologize in advance. It took me a few times to get used to this setup up here. And I'll flip right over here. Great. And so what you'll see here first is that I'm actually on the new WindowsAzure.com website. And one of the things we focused on is just making it easier to find some of the information that you need to get started with Windows Azure. If you haven't visited the website recently, you'll notice that we've made some significant updates to the website, so you can browse through, of course, features and start understanding some of the different services that are available as part of Windows Azure. You can also, as a developer, go into the Develop tab and see all the various developer centers that we're starting to expose. So developer centers for .NET, for PHP, for Node, as well as even introducing Python now. And with each one of those data centers, you can actually download the SDK and tools for the common tools that you use and browse through a variety of how-to guides and start understanding how to consume some of these scenarios. Once you're ready to actually get started with a Windows Azure account, you can click on free trial and sign up for a 90-day free trial. I imagine many of you in this room already have MSDN subscriptions today that you use for access to Visual Studio, to Windows, to a variety of other products. And so you should certainly check out signing up for a Windows Azure account where you take advantage of some of the Azure benefits that are associated with that MSDN subscription. And so what I have here as well is I've logged in to the new management portal. So I've already signed up for an account. And I've actually just logged into the new HTML-based management portal that we're exposing as part of this June release. What you'll notice in this preview portal is that I have access to start taking a look at all of the different services that I'm going to use to build and run applications in the cloud. So I can navigate through, for example, websites, virtual machines, things like cloud services. Start seeing status information for each one of these, as well as I have just a common interface to be able to go and add in additional new services, ranging from websites to storage accounts to databases. And so what we wanted to do with this new management experience is make it much simpler to just quickly get access to configure and manage the services that you depend on for your application. What you also notice is that this is HTML-based. And so what that means is it's really easy to go and use from a variety of different browsers. In this case, I'm running IE10 on a Windows 8 machine. But of course, I can go use a variety of other browsers, including Safari, Chrome, and others, as you'll see throughout some of the demos today. So we're pretty excited about just making the portal experience better and simpler, especially if you've been using Windows Azure. If you should need to navigate back to the previous portal, you can actually go click on the link up at the top and navigate back. And I know many of you are going to start putting your hands on some of these bits a little bit later. This is part of the reason I wanted to walk through some of the getting started type steps. So I mentioned earlier virtual machines and the ability to go have infrastructure as a service. So why don't we take a quick look at what that looks like within the new Windows Azure June update. Here you can see I have a couple different virtual machines configured. And what I'm actually going to do here is just select New. I'll go up to Virtual Machine. And I want to go ahead and add another one. You'll notice that throughout this the management experience, we expose both a Quick Create option as well as a Gallery option. Essentially, Quick Create is just like it sounds. I just want to enter the essential information that I need to get started using that service. What you'll notice with the Gallery is that we're starting to expose some common sets of templates and services that you can start using as a starting point. And working with many partners in the industry, including in this case, several of the different Linux distributions, to make those available as virtual machine images that you can start using. In this case, I'll just go ahead and select Quick Create, and I'll just go ahead and give it a name. What kind of name should we use here? Any thoughts? This is the audience participation part, by the way. I don't hear anything specific, so it sounds like you guys need more coffee. Maybe we could actually just call this coffee. There we go. Coffee VM. I imagine that one isn't taken. And then you can see I can select the base virtual machine image. In this case, I'll select the Windows 2012 release candidate. Provide this a password here. And I can specify the size of the virtual machine image that I want to run. If you've been using Windows Azure, you'll probably recognize some of these different labels that we put on the sizes of virtual machines. So I can have a virtual machine here that ranges from an extra small to an extra large. And those size labels really impact the amount of memory that's available, the number of cores that are available, the network I/O that's available, as well as the local storage that I can access within that virtual machine. The size, as you can imagine, also impacts the cost associated with running some of these different virtual machines. In this case, I'll just select a small instance, which is a single core, and then I can pick one of the data centers there where I can go and start running the Windows Azure virtual machines. In this case, I think East US will probably be the closest, so let me go ahead and start provisioning that. And what you'll see here is that within the new management experience, we'll start providing some of the notifications down at the bottom as we're doing things in the background. So you can continue to work on other tasks you may have with configuring and managing other services while we're starting up services, shutting down services, and doing other things on your behalf. So this will take a few minutes to start up this virtual machine. And so what I want to do here is actually show you one I've previously created. So I created this DevCamp 2012 VM the other day. And DevCamp 2012 is actually Windows Server 2012 release candidate virtual machine, like the one we just provisioned. And one of the things you'll notice as I drill into this virtual machine is that inside of the management portal, we're starting to expose some common metrics that you would care about for this service. So things like the CPU percentage usage, the data in, data out bandwidth. And so I can quickly get access to a view where I can see some of that information directly from the management portal. What you'll also see is the number of cores that I'm using, and I can go and configure this to expand those number of cores, obviously by changing the virtual machine size. And so at this point, this virtual machine is running, so why don't I just go ahead and connect into it? With the Windows Azure virtual machines that are running Windows Server, we by default configure remote desktop for you. So I can actually just click on connect here, type in my password, and within a few seconds here, I'll be remoted into my running virtual machine. And so you can see here, this is full Server 2012 release candidate. Of course, I can use Server 2008 R2, Server 2008 as well. And this is my virtual machine instance. And so what that means is I can go do with it whatever I want. If I want to go and install software, I can. If I want to go and customize any of the settings, if I want to do even things like install Active Directory, that's also an option that's available to me. And so you can see here, of course, I can just pull up things like Server Manager and start configuring some of the things that are available to me in Windows Server, some of the various roles and features. I can do things like pull up Event Viewer and start looking at the logs for this machine. Really full access to that underlying virtual machine. One of the things that you'll also notice is that if we just pop into Windows Explorer here, is that we have a couple different drives available, including drives that you can actually mount into some of these virtual machines. And we'll talk about how that's managed in just a little bit, but what this allows me to have is a persistent and durable way of storing data associated with these virtual machines. So here I'm remoted into this this Server 2012 VM. What about some of the other virtual machine options that are available to me? Let me show you some of these other VMs. Let me switch over to another machine here. And I'll probably have to log into this here. Oops. Bring it up out of standby. There we go. And to show you some of these other virtual machines, what I'm actually going to do is log in here to a MacBook here I have on stage. So here I have a MacBook, and I'm using Chrome to actually browse through some of the sites. I'll just go ahead and navigate into the Windows Azure Management Portal again here. It looks like I've timed out on my connection. So I'll go ahead and log in here. Okay, if I can type my password right. There we go. Cool. And what you'll notice here, if I go into the management portal, is again, I can go create a virtual machine. In this case, what I'll do is I'll select from the gallery. And when I select from the gallery, there you can see some of the different virtual machine images that we're exposing as pre-built starting points available to you. And so you can see here, I could go and select, of course, Windows Server 2008 R2, Server 2012, a virtual machine here with SQL Server 2012 already pre-installed. But I can also go select various versions of Linux distributions as well. And so, for example, I'll just pick the OpenSUSE virtual machine template here. I can go ahead and give this a name, like Toronto Camp. Type in username, password. So again, specify the instance size, and just proceed through the wizard here to start up this virtual machine. And so, take a few minutes for that VM to start up. So I'm on a MacBook here, but what can I do on a MacBook now as a developer or an IT pro? If I'm starting to build applications that maybe are iOS apps or a variety of other applications that I'm using for this device for. Well, one of the things you'll see here is that we're starting to expose now an SDK that you can leverage on OS X. And so if I actually just downloaded the OS X SDK here, and you'll notice that I can just go through an installation process that will pull in for me some command line tools. What these command line tools allow me to do is go and access and manage virtual machines, go and access websites, storage accounts, and a variety of other services that we would want to manage. So I've already installed these here on this machine. And so what I'm going to do here is just pull up a terminal window, and I'll just type Azure here, and you can see some of these commands that are available to you, complete with the nice little splash screen right there in terminal. So you can see here that I have the ability to go type in some commands pretty quickly and get access to some of these different services. So for example, I can go Azure VM, and I have different options for accessing a virtual machine. So I can do everything from create, list, start, shutdown, restart, and all the different types of operations. And I'll just do Azure VM list, and it'll come back with that list of the different virtual machines that are available to me. So I have complete access to manage these. And that's not just on OS X, but I can also do that on Windows as well with some PowerShell commandlets that we're making available as part of the June release. So I have a couple different VMs that are actually running out here. And so what can I do with some of those VMs? Well, you'll notice I have one here that I've created earlier. It's already ready. It's a DevCamp Linux and a DevCamp SUSE VM. So what I'm going to actually do here is I'm just going to SSH in to one of those VMs. So I'll just type in the VM name, DevCamp SUSE Cloud App.net, type my port, and hit enter. And so what you'll see here, then I'm going to prompt it for my password. If I can type that right. There we go. And at this point, I'm actually just SSH'd in to one of these instances. So I have the full ability to go then install a variety of different software I want. So if you are working in an environment where you're using Linux as well, you can see that we're opening up the ability to go run Linux VMs out in Windows Azure and then run a variety of different other kinds of workloads on top of that. I can install things like MongoDB, install things like Redis, Memcached, and other components that I may be using as part of my application. So with that, let me flip back to slides here and talk a little bit more about the virtual machine support. Great. So we've seen a few different things as I walked through that quick demo. So you saw both Windows Server as well as you saw Linux. What you also saw is just the ability to go run a variety of different types of workloads. I have full access to those underlying virtual machines, so I can really go do anything I want on top of those VMs. And Corey, a little bit later, will be showing a variety of different types of examples on how to leverage them. What we didn't take a look at, though, is also an important capability, is what we refer to as virtual private networking. And oftentimes, when you're running components out in the cloud, you're running different applications, there's a need to go and access resources that are available in an on-premise environment, whether those be database systems, whether those be directory systems like Active Directory, or existing applications that have been built over the last 20 or 30 years. They're just not realistic to move to the cloud, maybe either for cost reasons or for compliance reasons or other policy reasons. And so what we've enabled with this June release is for you to also go and establish a complete virtual private network between your Windows Azure instances that are running out there, in this case VMs, to your on-premises environment. Basically, you can go up to the portal and configure the way you want that network to be represented, and then download a profile that can be applied to some common VPN devices, like Cisco devices, and configure them for the connectivity, really opening up your entire network to be accessible by your Windows Azure instances. It's an important capability to look at, especially if you're building enterprise-class applications. So there's a few aspects of virtual machines that I want to talk through in a little more detail. One of those is around portability. All the virtual machine instances that we created in Windows Azure through the portal experience, or that you would go and create and leverage over time, are using a file format referred to as VHD. VHD file format has been around for quite a while. I imagine many of you, I see the heads nodding in the room, have used it for either Windows Server or virtual PC or a variety of different products from Microsoft in the past. The virtual VHD file format is actually an open specification. We've submitted it out to as an OSP, and we're embracing it with a number of products. What does that really mean, though? Well, for one, we can get started building virtual machines in a variety of different ways. If you're using Windows Server today and using virtualization with Windows Server, you can go and take VHDs that exist in Windows Server and just simply move them up to Windows Azure. There's no export process. There's no additional conversion process that has to happen on those VHDs. They're the same VHDs that that will just go and run inside of Windows Azure. So it's really easy to go and move and leverage some of those existing virtual machine images you already have. What it also means, though, is we can take virtual machine images that we have from Windows Azure and bring them back down. While I started from the portal experience and provisioning that VHD up in Windows Azure, I could also then take that VHD file and simply download it and run it on top of Windows Server, or even now Windows 8 with the Hyper-V support, and run it locally as well. And so just enabling a lot of flexibility to the way you go use those virtual machine images. What this also means, though, is that you have the ability to go take that virtual machine image and port it over to other cloud environments. So for example, I can find another service provider that is running Windows Server, a hosting provider, and take those VHDs and move them over to another hosting provider, or back and forth. And what we really believe this is going to enable is for you to have a kind of no lock-in solution for virtual machine images, where you're not locked into a specific cloud environment, and you can really have the flexibility to move and change as your application needs and requirements change as well. The other aspect of virtual machine images that I want to talk about is how we're handling some of the persistence. You saw that additional drive that I had mounted in my Windows Server virtual machine image. What we're actually doing as part of this new virtual machine offering is that we're using the Windows Azure Storage Service to manage the persistence and the storage of those VHD images. What this means is that we're able to build on top of the services and functionality that we have in place today and continue to enhance some of those core services as we build out this layered platform. Some of you may be familiar with Windows Azure Storage today, and you're probably familiar with the fact that with Storage today, storage actually maintains at all times 3 replicas of my data at any given point. What this means is that we're really resilient from any kind of hardware failures. So should a disk, should a drive, or a machine for that matter, actually have a failure, we'll notice the failure and actually start moving over one of the replicas and bringing on a third online to replace that failed drive. And what this really means from a virtual machine image standpoint is that we can really rely on those VM images to always be on and be very reliable. In fact, when a virtual machine is using VHDs running on Windows Azure and using the storage system, underlying storage system, should there be one of these drive failures, it's completely transparent to the virtual machine itself. The virtual machine doesn't have to restart, doesn't have to do any kind of reboot, there's no additional configuration. It just continues to work as you'd expect. One of the other aspects of Windows Azure Storage, though, is what we refer to as continuous storage geo-replication. What this means is that we're actually replicating the data that's in Windows Azure Storage across multiple data centers. So we'll actually replicate the data as data changes occur to data centers that are over 400 miles that are separated around the world. And so what this allows you to do is ensure that should there be any kind of natural disaster or just complete data center failure, there's a copy of your data that's available. With Windows Azure Storage, the continuous replication is turned on by default. It's something that you can disable if for policy reasons or for other reasons you don't want the replication to occur. But what we believe is this provides just a lot more resilience within the platform for running these virtual machine images, as well as for using with other data that you may want to store within the cloud. So pretty excited about the way we've been able to build out this set of services and build on top of this some of the investments that you've already taken advantage of. So I've talked a lot about virtual machines, and we're excited about what we're doing with providing infrastructure as a service now in the cloud. And I think this is going to make it a lot easier for many of you to take existing applications, existing systems, and start moving them to Windows Azure and to start extending them with additional services and capabilities over time. But I talked at the beginning about we kind of got our foundation with Azure as providing a platform, some services that were really turnkey that you as developers could depend on, simply turn on and start consuming. And one of those new capabilities that we're starting to expose with this June release is a functionality called Windows Azure Websites. With Windows Azure Websites, you can think of it as essentially as a managed service that allows you to go run HTTP-based workloads. Things like websites themselves, the web APIs, anything you'd want to respond across to HTTP that you use as part of your application. These websites can be built with some familiar languages that you're probably already using today as a developer. ASP.NET, Node.js, PHP. And what you'll see in the Developer Center is, of course, the SDKs for each one of these languages. But these websites can also be built using common tools that many of you are familiar with and common deployment technologies. So things like web deploy support that just integrated as part of Visual Studio itself. Things like Git, if many of you are starting to use GitHub and Git within the room. As well as the ability just to simply use FTP and copy the files up to a website, which is still very, very common, I know, within a lot of environments. One of the other deployment approaches that we were excited to unveil earlier this month as well is support for Team Foundation Service, where you can really have your source code stored out in the Team Foundation Service in the cloud, enable a continuous integration where as you perform check-ins for that source code, that those website check-ins are then automatically built and deployed out into a Windows Azure website. With Windows Azure websites, we haven't been just focusing on the technology, but also thinking about how do you get started and get access to these services, and then start really scaling up and using them as your applications and your websites grow. And with that, we've decided to make sure that the first websites you create are free, and then as you have the need to go and scale and have isolation, then you can go and turn on what we call reserved instances, and then pay for those instances as you need them. And so, pretty excited about the way we're exposing Windows Azure websites. And so with that, I thought I'd show you a few demos of what websites look like. Sound good? So let me go ahead and flip over to another machine here. Great. So I'm back over here to my demo machine, and what you should see here is I'm back in the portal. Looks like I got a bunch of more VMs that have been spun up and created since we were going through a few of the slides. And now let's take a look at the websites capability. So I'll go over here to websites, and you'll notice I don't have a new website yet. So let me go ahead and just create one. So I'll just pull up the quick create option here. And I got to come up with a better name than coffee here. Let's see here. Any ideas? Any suggestions? What's that? Everybody's so quiet. Corey Fowler. There we go. I see him in the back of the room. I don't know if he's reserved his name yet, so we'll see here if that's available. It looks like it is. Sorry, Corey. I have your DNS entry now. So it'd be interesting what kind of content we can actually put out here on the site. So I've created this website called Corey Fowler. And from here, I can actually just go ahead and start taking a look at this website. So you'll notice that similar to the virtual machines experience, I have a dashboard where I can see some of the different metrics for this site. Of course, we don't have anything deployed. We haven't really started running our site, so we don't see any data yet. I can just scroll down and see some of the usage information that's available. So in this case, I've created this as an initial free website, and it's a website that's a shared website. And so you can see that I have common metrics like CPU time, data out, and so forth. What I'm going to do is actually just download a publishing profile. And this publishing profile is just a common XML file that we're using as part of Visual Studio to make it really easy to do a deployment of websites. And once I've downloaded that, let me just go ahead and flip over to Visual Studio here, and I'll just start building out my first website. So here I'm running Visual Studio 2012, the release candidate. Has anybody tried out Visual Studio 2012 yet? A few hands, okay. Well, everything you're going to see me do here is you can go do in Visual Studio 2010 as well. I just wanted to run the latest and greatest bits. Sometimes I enjoy the pain I inflict on dropping everything on the same machine. But I want to run all the latest bits and show you the latest experience. Everything you see here, though, we can go do on top of Visual Studio 2010 as well. So I'll go ahead and just create a new project here. And you'll see that we have access to just building some websites and ASP.NET MVC4. And let's go ahead and call this website Corey Fowler. And I'll go ahead and select from one of the different templates available. ASP.NET MVC4, which again is available on top of Visual Studio 2010 as well, exposes a number of pre-built templates now that you can use to start building applications. So just a completely empty template, an internet application template, a mobile application template, even one for exposing REST-based web APIs. that you can start leveraging. So nice enhancements as part of ASP.NET MVC. But we didn't come here to learn about ASP.NET MVC. We came here to learn about Windows Azure, right? So let's go ahead and see how we can go quickly build and deploy this site out to Windows Azure websites. So here I have my my Corey Fowler website. And what I'm going to do here is just right-click, and I'll just go select Publish. And I will just import in that publishing profile that I downloaded earlier. So here's my Corey Fowler publishing profile. And that basically gives me all the information that Visual Studio needs, more specifically the web deploy technology, which is common across Visual Studio 2012 RC, Visual Studio 2010. And it gives that web deploy technology all of the settings that we need to actually go and publish out our website. And so with a few clicks there through the wizard, what you'll notice is that Visual Studio is actually doing a compilation of our application. It's taking all the configuration information, and then we're actually publishing that out into Windows Azure websites. And then in a few seconds, our website actually pops up here in the browser, just our default browser. And now you can see that Corey Fowler, Windows Azure Websites.net, is now live. So anybody can go access and take a look at that website. So Corey, you are now even more famous. So what about changes, though? So that's a quick website. What about changing the website? Well, let me show you how quickly you can do some changes to that site. So let me go ahead and just change this here if I can type today. Corey Fowler's awesome site. I'll go ahead and save that. Go back into Solution Explorer, right-click here, and say Publish. And what you'll notice here is that we're able to determine what are the exact changes that we need to push with this deployment. And as we do this deployment, the incremental deployment, we're only going to push the updates that are necessary for our application. So if we actually go and push that update, you'll see in just a few seconds that our update is now live on Windows Azure websites. And so you see just quickly how I can get started, build sites, make changes, deploy those changes to the cloud, see the results of my changes, and just an awesome experience going back from Visual Studio as a .NET developer and using Windows Azure to go and power these HTTP-based applications. What do you guys think? Cool? So that's Windows Azure websites with Visual Studio and .NET. What about some of those other languages and technologies that I talked about earlier and some of the other different deployment options? Well, to show you those, what I'm actually going to do here is switch over here to another machine. And I will just go ahead and switch over to this MacBook again. And it doesn't look like it took yet. Hold on just a second. There we go. Great. Okay. Excellent. Now it's up. So we can, in addition to building those sites with .NET and Visual Studio, we can also go and build them on other operating systems. If I'm using another operating system like OS X as a developer, but I can also leverage some of those other frameworks, languages, technologies to go build those websites. So here what you see is I'm back here in Terminal on OS X. And what I can do quickly here is just Azure Sites, I was in the wrong console here. Azure, there we go. Azure Site List, and get that complete list of my websites that come back. So I see Corey Fowler is now running. Let me go ahead, in this case, just create another website. And what I've done here is I've created a few files here. So let me go ahead and just path into Azure Demos. And I've created a very simple Hello World kind of node demo. So let me just go ahead and path into that. World node. Great. And you see here that I have just a simple server.js file. It just returns Hello World. If you haven't got started with Node, you can think of Node as just as a technology that's built on top of JavaScript, and it provides a pretty simple model for building out websites and web-based workloads using JavaScript entirely. So here you can see my application, and what I'm going to do is actually just do an Azure Site Create, and I'm actually just going to specify the name of the site. Let's call this Corey. Corey Fowler node, and I will set up Git as part of this as well. And so what you see is that I'm actually going to just create the website entirely from the command line in this case. And so it's creating that website, but because I specified as a parameter that I want to use Git as a deployment model, it's also initializing this local directory as a Git repo, and it's also initializing the Git deployment support that's available within Windows Azure websites. In fact, if I go back over here to the management portal, go into websites, and go ahead and do a quick refresher, what you'll see here is that we should have our Corey Fowler website, and then we have our Corey Fowler node website as well. If I go over here to the deployments tab, what you'll also notice is that the Git repository has been initialized here, and it gives me some instructions here, if I'm not familiar with using Git, on how I can go configure it. So in this case, I've actually gone ahead and built out the sample app. So let me just go ahead and open it up here, and I'll just show you what that looks like. So here's my very simple node application. And you can see in this case, I'm just writing out simple hello world. So I'm initializing the HTTP server, and I'm just outputting a hello world text here. And let me go ahead and just deploy this now. So I'm back over here in terminal. And what I'm going to do is run some quick Git commands here. I'll do a quick Git add, Git commit, and initial deployment. Okay, and then I'll just do a Git push, Azure master. And if you're not familiar with Git, these are some standard Git commands for actually interacting with GitHub or a variety of other repos. And so I just enter my password here. And so what you're actually seeing is that we're deploying out all this source into GitHub right now, and out into Windows Azure websites via Git. And what you see here is that our deployment is now live, and then we can actually start browsing to Corey Fowler node. So if I just go ahead and hit browse here, we can see our simple Hello World application. So what about changes? Well, let me go back over here into our text editor, and I'll just call this Hello Corey. Thank you, Corey, for providing all the material for the demo. Yes. I'll go ahead and just make a quick change here and save that. Go back over to my terminal window. I'll just do a git add again. Git commit. Updated for Corey. And what I'll do from here is just do another push. There you go. And so prompt me for my password again. And then as we go back over here into the browser, what you'll see is that we're actually doing another deployment. And so with Git, as well as with TFS, what we're able to do is do the build on the servers, do the build in the cloud, and then have multiple deployments, with one of those deployments being active. And now if I actually browse out to that deployment, now I can see Hello Corey. One of the nice things about Git, as well as the TFS deployment options, is the ability to then go and switch. So what if I wanted to go actually and roll back to the previous deployment that has occurred? Let me go ahead and just select redeploy. It'll prompt me if I want to go ahead and redeploy that previous deployment. And you'll notice that now my active deployment has now been flipped. If I go back out to our website, I just do a quick refresh, and you see it's back to Hello World too. So very quickly and easily able to go and use a variety of different languages, a variety of different development environments and tools that, that many of you in here are probably familiar with, from Visual Studio to just text editors on OS X, and even start leveraging a variety of different deployment technologies with Windows Azure websites as well. And I've just shown you just a few of those right now. So what happens after you start building and running some of these initial sites? Well, you may have to start thinking about, how do I scale some of these, and how do I configure, monitor, and manage them? And so if we go back over here into our dashboard, what you can see is on the dashboard is that we're starting to see some of the information, usage information about our site here. Do a quick refresh and pull in the latest stats. And we start seeing some of the usage information for our website. And we can also then go over and perform some configuration for it. So you can go take a look at deployments as you saw. go over and configure the .NET Framework version, whether I'm running PHP, what version of PHP that I want to enable, host names, and so we'll see that in the case of reserved instances a little bit later. Turn on some various diagnostics like web server logging, failed request tracing, and so we can get some more insight into how our application's behaving, and even configure application settings and connection strings, which I'm sure 95% of you in this room are deeply familiar with, and flip my default documents. As I think about the need to go and scale up this application, you notice I can go over to the Scale tab. And so by default, all of these websites I've been deploying so far have been running as shared websites. They've been running next to other websites on the same virtual machine instances. And that's why we're able to just get these economies of scale for running these sites. What I can do here, though, is I can also flip over to reserved. And what reserved allows me to do is to actually have dedicated instances for my websites. We'll get a prompt here that flipping over reserved does impact the cost, because we're actually going to go to having our own dedicated virtual machine instance for all of the websites that we have configured here. So I can go over to reserved, and you'll notice then I can pick the size of the virtual machine. For websites, the sizes range from small to large using the same definitions that we use for the virtual machine support. And I can also then specify my instance count. And so if I want to go 1 to 3 different instances, I can just go ahead and do that and then just apply those changes. And then just the matter of, you know, 20, 30 seconds, oftentimes, then it'll go ahead and configure the scaling support. In this case, it just doesn't like your name, Corey. So the preview portal didn't like Corey Fowler's name. So you can see how we can go quickly scale up those websites and take advantage of Windows Azure websites as well. The one last thing I want to show you before we flip back over to slides is getting started from a common template that's available to you. And so in both these cases with ASP.NET as well as with Node, I had a very simple application that I created from scratch. But what about some of the common website templates that are available? Well, you'll notice if I go over to create a website from a gallery that we're starting to expose many of the common content management services and frameworks that are available from the community out through Windows Azure websites. So with just a few clicks here, as an example, I can go ahead and pick anything from like .NET Nuke, go ahead and pick Orchard, Umbraco, or even things like WordPress. If I go ahead and pick WordPress as an example, I can just call this Corey's blog. Corey, I'm going to take all of your subdomains today. And you'll notice, I'll give them back, and you'll notice that we also have the ability to go run MySQL as part of these websites as well. So of course, WordPress depends on MySQL as the underlying database engine. And so through a partner called ClearDB, we're actually exposing MySQL support now inside of Windows Azure websites. And so you have access to a MySQL database that you can go provision. And then just in the matter of a few seconds here, if we name the database, agree to the terms, and just start spinning up that WordPress blog. And you see the blog being created. So variety of different types of websites, variety of different types of apps we can go and run. You're starting from your code or starting from some common templates that are available. So let me go ahead and flip back over to the presentation here. Excellent. I'm starting to get in that flip down here. So we talked a little bit about scale. And so let's take a look in a little more depth about what's actually happening with Windows Azure websites as we started doing these deployments and taking advantage of this new service. By default, as I mentioned, we're actually running Windows Azure websites in a shared mode. So for many of you, when you start playing with the bits this afternoon during the hackathon time or going through some of the hands-on labs and tutorials that were being passed around here in the room, then you can actually start taking advantage of that shared mode and running up to 10 different websites within your Windows Azure account completely for free. There's some usage caps on those websites, the amount of memory that you use, the amount of data transfer, that kind of thing. But this provides a nice, simple way to get started and quickly start building out some applications. With shared, it's just as it implies. You're sharing the machine instance, the virtual machine instance, with other websites. Those may be friends of yours. Those may be, you know, colleagues that are also running other websites. They may be somebody completely, somebody else completely around the world that's also running their website on in that same data center. And what we do is intelligently just start stacking those websites across the different machines as they're being deployed. We can also scale up shared instances. And what I mean scale on shared instances is we actually just start scaling those across to multiple machines, where we're still shared, but we're actually running those on different machines for higher availability and also for higher performance. But then we can also go into reserve mode. And what reserve mode really means is that you can take those websites that you have and move them into a full dedicated virtual machine instance. Still take advantage of all the same frameworks and languages that you saw, take advantage of the same deployment technologies from FTP to Git to web deploy TFS. That allows us to have greater isolation and also just greater scale because there's more resources available to those instances. And then as we go ahead and scale up and add more instances, you'll notice that we're going to go scale out our site and make that available, more highly available as well. What's interesting to understand as well with reserved instances is that all of your websites run in reserved. And what that means is that you're able to consolidate multiple websites together to better utilize some of those resources. So hopefully it gives you a better insight to how Windows Azure websites work. So we've talked about virtual machines. We've also talked about websites. Let's talk a little bit about a third compute model, what we call cloud services. And cloud services, if you've been using Windows Azure, is a very familiar model that's been in Windows Azure for a while. We're continuing to enhance and expand the capabilities that are provided with cloud services. Cloud services are really designed now for those kind of multi-tier applications where, in addition to maybe a web front-end workload, you need to run something in the background. You need to run other kinds of what we refer to as roles, other types of workloads that are composed as part of your application. But they're a little different than virtual machines in that we still automate and manage a lot of the platform for you when it comes to deploying out bits across machines, monitoring the state and the health of various instances. We monitor and manage all of that for you. And so with that, what I want to do is just show you a quick demo of cloud services using some of the new SDKs and tools that we just released. So let me flip back over to my demo machine here. And I'll go back to Corey Fowler's awesome site. I'm having some fun with that one. So here we have Corey's site, and what I can do is I can actually just take a website now and convert this into a cloud service. So I have this this website. I can just right-click here and say Add Windows Azure Cloud Service Project. So once you install the Windows Azure SDKs and tools for Visual Studio, it'll give you this menu option, either Visual Studio 2012 or in Visual Studio 2010 that you can leverage. By doing that, it's actually done a few different things to my solution. One is you see it pulled in a bunch of references here to some Windows Azure libraries that I can start to take advantage of. It's also added in here into my solution another project. And that project allows me to capture the configuration information that's required to take advantage of cloud services. Here you can see that as part of that, we have a role defined. And the role really describes the type of workload that we want to run and how Windows Azure should apply some of that automated service management for us. If I just double click on this role, in this case, this is a web role for running that Corey Fowler awesome website. And I can go ahead and change the instance count here. And so I can just specify as part of this configuration and definition for my role how many instances I want to run and even the size of those virtual machine instances, again, ranging from an extra small to an extra large. So I'll set that to 2. But what I can also do with cloud services, it really makes it unique from websites, is I can run all types of other types of roles as well. So let me go ahead and add in here a worker role, and I'll just call this simply background service. I'll just go ahead and add that in. So a lot of applications you build, and I'm sure many of you have built in this room, have a need to go run things asynchronously. Maybe you listen to incoming messages from a queue, maybe go out to connect to other sites and pull in data. In this case, that's where we have what we call worker roles. And this worker role, I just have a very simple run method where by default, I'm just going to sleep the thread, wake up, and just write out some tracing message. But of course, I can replace this with any other kinds of code that I want to run on a periodic basis to go access other kinds of resources. So, so right here I have this worker role, and now what I'm going to do is just configure that worker role, background service, to also run two instances, and go ahead and start up this cloud service application. With cloud services, we provide a local emulator environment that emulates how your application will run locally before you deploy it out into Windows Azure. This emulator would actually represents the number of instances that you've configured and allows you to interact with those Windows Azure APIs. So it looks like I got a caching issue in the browser. Let me just refresh that. And here you see Corey Fowler's awesome website. In this case, you see the website's now running just locally because I'm running as part of that emulator. In fact, if I go down to my taskbar here, I'll just go ahead and select Show Compute Emulator UI, and it'll actually just pull up the user interface for that emulator. And here you can see the instances that we're actually running. So if I expand the roles, for example, background service, or for the web role, and I can drill into one of those one of those services and see the trace message that's being outputted. So I can just test some of my cloud service applications directly here. At the point where I'm ready to go deploy my cloud service project, what I can actually do is just right-click on that project and select Publish, similar to what we do with websites. Pull in or download and pull in a publishing profile, which handles all the information like setting up their certificates, like configuring that certificate on my local machine, as well as all the settings that are necessary to deploy this cloud service out to Windows Azure. So you can see here that we've, even for people who have used cloud services for a while as part of Windows Azure, that we've continued to enhance the tooling experience that's available through the new SDKs and tools. Flip back over here to my demo machine. Slides. So as I go through that wizard and do the deployment for a cloud service, there's a few things that that happen, and that's really exposed how cloud services are managed by Windows Azure. What we do in Visual Studio is we create what we refer to as a service package. You can think of this as essentially as a zip file that would contain my assemblies, my DLLs, my configuration information, like the number of roles and number of instances I specified. And we have that service package as well as the associated service configuration. We then deploy that up to Windows Azure. And then Windows Azure would take that service package and that configuration, and it would start up those virtual machine instances for us. And in our case, because we had two roles with two instances each, it actually start up four machine instances and then start actually deploying out that service package onto those machine instances. And as part of doing that, it's going to monitor those machine instances for us. And so what we're able to do then is go and access that website through the load balancer that those machines are registered with. And should there be some kind of failure with one of those machine instances, we're going to detect that and then automatically spin up another instance and redeploy that service package. And so that's what some of the automation that really comes in with cloud services, where you don't have to think about actually spinning up those machines manually, of redeploying bits and reconfiguring things. In fact, you don't even have to think about the software updates to those machine instances. So you can simply specify that you want to have automatic updates for those to occur all the time. And so with that, what I'll do is I'll switch back over here to the demo, and I'll show you how you can manage cloud services now in the new Azure Management Portal. So I'm back over to my demo machine, and I'll go over to the portal. And what I've created here, and I've deployed earlier, was a simple cloud service. It's a Hello Toronto Dev Camp. And as part of this cloud service, you'll notice that I get some information here about my usage and the number of cores, just similar to what I have with websites and virtual machines. I can then navigate over to the monitoring tab and see some of the monitoring statistics. Some of the details for how my machine instances are also running. One of the things that we're exposing that's new as part of this Windows Azure update is the ability to surface your own diagnostics information for cloud services as well. And so what you can see here is that in addition to the metrics that are displayed by default, I can select Add Metrics, and I have access to a variety of other metrics that are exposed through the machine instance, including some custom ones that my application is exposing, like the number of page requests to the home page. And I can do that in aggregate, or I can do it for specific instances that I want to see those details for. And to go ahead and apply and see those changes on the site. What I can also do is then configure these cloud services. And so I can turn on various levels of monitoring, change connection string information for connecting out to diagnostics as an example. I can go over to the scale tab, and I can also start scaling out my Windows Azure cloud service application. So in this case, remember we have two roles, a web role and a worker role, that we're running two instances each. What if for some reason I'm getting just an increased amount of traffic to Corey Fowler's awesome application here? And I can actually just go ahead and increase the number of instances just through the scale slider now that's exposed in the portal. Save those changes, and again, Windows Azure is going to automatically spin up those instances for us and redeploy our cloud service package into each one of those instances. Likewise, over time, if I need to go scale down, I can do that in the portal as well. And the benefit of this multi-tier style application is that as you start structuring more enterprise class kind of applications and applications that have a variety of different types of usage patterns, I can scale those roles independently. And so I can easily go and scale not only the web front end tier, but also the background service as well to perform some of the processing more quickly in the background. If I go over to the Instances tab, what you'll notice is the actual machine instances that we're running. So here's the four. And because we actually are running these dedicated instances for you, I have similar capabilities to what I have with virtual machines and the ability to go RDP straight into the instance. And so just by typing in my password here, I can go straight into that virtual machine instance. I can go and pull up INET Manager, you know, IIS Manager. In this case, I'm just running Server 2008. And I can actually see there's my website, there's my bin folder with all the different assemblies that were deployed, and there's my views and all my configuration files. So again, all this deployed, configured, managed automatically, including all the IIS settings based on what I specified as part of that cloud service configuration. So that's a quick tour of cloud services with the new SDK tools and the new management portal experience. There we go. Okay. Oops. Just lost it. There we go. So we've taken a look at virtual machines and the new infrastructure as a service capabilities. We've taken a look at websites, ability to go run HTTP-based workloads. We've also taken a look at cloud services. But in addition to just running your code and your applications, what we want to continue to do is expand the number of different building block services that are available to you. And you'll recognize several of these if you've been using Windows Azure for a while. We're continuing to enhance some of these different building block services, as well as introduce net new ones. And the fundamental concept with these building block services is that, of course, you can go spin up virtual machines, you can SSH into those machines, you can RDP into them, you can configure everything you want, you can save and persist those changes and have your environment just like you would with infrastructure today. With these building block services, what we wanted to do is have some turnkey services that you can just configure and consume as part of the applications that you will build. Services where all of the things, the complexity of managing that service are really abstracted from you and just provide some simple APIs that you can start leveraging. A core principle with building block services is to also support multiple languages. And similar to what we've talked about with websites and the ability to use PHP and .NET, that applies across all of these services as well. With each one of these services, we're providing client libraries that are available as open source, available at GitHub that you can go leverage. And all of those client libraries can also be downloaded from the download centers on windowsazure.com. The benefit of going with an open source-based model is, of course, you can start looking at the code, you can explore the code, contribute back any kind of changes as you see is necessary. But you also understand how some of the underlying APIs work. And all these services expose a REST-based API that should you choose to go write your own client library or consume it from maybe a language that's not represented here, that's an option as well. And so that's one of the key things that we want to enable. One of the services is the SQL Azure Database Service. And with the SQL Database Service, what we want to provide is a fully relational database in the cloud. Service that we've had since the beginning of Windows Azure, since it was commercially available, and we're continuing to enhance with more capabilities. The Windows Azure SQL Database is a fully managed database system. So you don't have to think about things like, how do I go and provide replicas on my data? How do I ensure that it's highly available? We're going to manage and automate a lot of those things for you. How do I think about scaling that website against something, scaling that database, something we've managed for you, as well as new capabilities. And so what we released this month is support for SQL reporting, so I can go build reports and business intelligence systems on top of my databases. And so just to give you a glimpse of what databases look like and the new management experience, let me go ahead and flip over to my demo machine. And I'll go back here to my tab, and I'll select SQL databases. And so what I can do here is just go ahead and quickly create a new SQL database. Again, quick create, custom create. For my quick create here, I'll call this Corey Fowler DB. As my new database server, my login name, I'll Corey F. Fowler. And I will just go ahead and type my password here. And create. And so what this will do is it will go ahead and create my initial database as well as my database server that I can start just directly accessing. So here's my new Corey Fowler DB. And on Corey Fowler DB, once you once it gets created, you'll notice that I can just simply click on it and get access to all the connection string information. So here I have connection strings for ADO.NET, for ODBC, for PHP, even JDBC that I can paste in, change my password, and start connecting out to this database. Of course, because this is SQL Server capabilities running in the cloud, I can also use tools like the SQL Server Developer Tools in Visual Studio, or use SQL Server Management Studio and just connect directly out to that database, run T-SQL scripts, and start configuring it. Over time, if I need to go scale this database, I can select from two different editions for the types of database that are available, a web and a business. With web, I can scale it up to 150 gigs per database instance. One of the things that we released a few months ago as part of our continuous service updates is also a thing called federation for SQL databases. It simply allows me to partition these databases as well, so I can scale well beyond 150 gigs and get higher performance along the way. So that's a quick tour of SQL databases in the new management portal. So we've talked a little bit about the blob storage capability for backing virtual machines and VHDs. What we have as part of blob storage as well is the ability for you to go store a variety of other types of files and content that you may want to use as part of your websites, as part of maybe a solution you're building with virtual machines, or with cloud services. The blobs that you store out in blob storage can be exposed publicly through HTTP, so you can simply just include links to them, maybe in if they're images, include the link directly as part of your website to those blobs. Or they can be locked down and accessible through the REST-based services that are exposed through blob storage. And so, really simple service to get started with. As part of the Windows Azure SDKs, of course, you see client libraries for accessing blobs as well. So you can create, update, delete, and fully access the blob storage environment. And all of the blob data you provide out there, videos, documents, pictures, whatever that content may be, even unstructured log files, all that content takes advantage of the continuous geo-replication that's provided by blob storage. And so you can ensure that there's a copy of that data that's available should there be any kinds of problems. One of the things we've introduced now with storage is the ability to also surface some of the analytics and the metrics for how storage is being used. Here you can see a quick screenshot of how to go and get access to some of that information as part of the new portal experience. So I can see things such as the overall storage size I'm taking advantage of, as well as even just the availability for the service. So we're surfacing some of the SLA information directly through the new management portal as well. If you already have a storage account, the way you can configure this and see it in the portal is just go over to the Configure tab and just turn on the analytics. And it'll start capturing this information. You'll see it over time. Yep. I'll come to questions in just a little bit. One of the other new services that we're introducing is a service capability for caching. And with caching, what we wanted to do is provide a low latency in-memory cache that you can take advantage of from your applications. And what's true with cache, as well as all of these building block services, is that we want to make it easy for you to use it as part of a cloud service, as part of a website, or a virtual machine, regardless of how you're running the compute capability for your application. What we're also doing with caching is exposing support for the Memcached protocol. And so if applications are using Memcached today, because we support this protocol, literally just changing the configuration for your application to point to the cache service is all you need to do to start taking advantage of this in Windows Azure. What's the really nice thing about the caching service is you can dynamically grow and shrink the cache as you need to for your application. So as you have the need to cache data, you can grow that thing up. And as you have the need to just go scale that down, or you're not taking on as much load for your website or your application, you can quickly just go into the portal, move the slider, and change the cache size as well. And so to show you this, what I'm going to do is flip over my demo machine and show you a quick sample application. So I'll go back over to Visual Studio, and I will go ahead and open up a new project here and just browse out to a little application called Twitter Reader. And just as the name implies, this is a very basic Twitter application that allows us to pull in a set of tweets from Twitter for a given tag. So let me go ahead and just run this here. This is a cloud service application, so you notice that the emulator is going to start up. And we'll see that we can actually see some of those tweets that are tweeted on the Windows Azure account. So if I just go ahead and run this here, you'll see that I can go ahead and access Twitter and pull in some of those tweets. And you'll notice that as I go out to Twitter's APIs, I'm getting various response times ranging from up to 5 seconds in the last request, just over 1.5 seconds. And so in this case, a classic example, it would be nice to actually start caching some of that data because we don't know the response time to Twitter or how we may be throttled when we go access Twitter. So let me go ahead and just turn on caching support for this application. I'll go back over here in Solution Explorer. And again, since I have the new Azure SDK and tools installed, I can double-click on the role, and I see this new cache tab over here on the left-hand side. On the cache tab, I can just click to enable the caching support and then specify the amount of memory that's available in that web role where I want to take advantage of. And here's what's really important is I'm taking advantage of that spare memory that's in my web role to go run my cache. And so there's no incremental charges beyond running my cloud service here because that memory is essentially free memory that's available. This is really a nice way to optimize my application. And so I've turned on caching for the role. Now I actually have to go change a little bit of my code to take advantage of caching and read from the cache. To do that, what I'm going to do is right-click on our Twitter Reader, and I'll go to Manage NuGet Packages, and I'll just pull in the caching preview, Windows Azure Caching Preview NuGet package. And what this will allow me to do is give me all of the assemblies and configuration information I need to write some code against the cache service. If I then go into web.config, you'll notice that there's some configuration settings that were added here for me. I'll just go ahead and specify that I want to use Twitter Reader, my role over here, as my cache role, and I'll also just enable the local cache here. So let me just go ahead and uncomment this, enable the local cache. And the final thing to do is just need to write some code against the cache APIs. So here you can see a simple controller where I'm just reading in those tweets. Let me go ahead and just delete this code. And if I can get used to this keyboard, I'll just go ahead and pull in a quick code snippet here. And this code snippet will allow me to just use the caching APIs. In this case, I'm going to check the cache to see if the data is available in cache. If it's not, I'm going to go get the data for the first time and cache it. So the next subsequent request will be reading from cache. If I just go ahead and run this here, what you'll see is we'll build compiler solution. We'll load it up in the emulator again. It'll navigate out to our application running locally because it's in the emulator. and then we can go ahead and just pull in all the tweets for the Windows Azure account. And of course, the first request, we don't have the data in cache. So the first request here, we're over about 3 seconds actually for the request. The next request, we drop down significantly. And as the caching starts warming up and we continue to press F5, we're just starting to see sub-millisecond requests into our cache and pulling in that data. And so you're going to see quickly how we can start taking advantage of that new caching capabilities inside of our cloud service and that spare memory to increase the performance of our application. Pretty simple. So that's the caching capability. I talked about this using some of the spare memory. So what does this mean when you have more than one instance, more than one role? Well, imagine I had 4 instances of my web role, 300 megs available as spare memory as part of each one. What we actually do when you start running these as cloud services out in Windows Azure is that we form a distributed cache ring across all of that spare memory. And so there's 1.2 gigs in this scenario of total memory that would be available for cache. The way this works is, regardless of which machine instance writes to the cache data is available for any of those machine instances to go and access that data very quickly. Where you can scale this is really by adding more machine instances or if you need to scale down, taking away machine instances. But you can also change the size of those virtual machines. In fact, if we wanted to, we could even have dedicated roles, similar to a background service, dedicate an entire role to just running cache. And so here you can see that we have 2 roles that are running cache with 12 gigs of memory available each for a total of 24 gigs. And if we wanted to even go scale that up even further, we could just start adding even up to 48 gigs of distributed cache and scaling it as we need to. So a pretty exciting capability that we're exposing with caching. I imagine many of you in this room have started using the service bus as one of the building block services as well. And Corey's going to talk a fair amount about it a little bit later. With service bus, what we want to provide is really a scalable service that you can go use to exchange messages, as well as to build kind of hybrid applications that would connect back to on-premise-based environments. What we're enabling with the service bus is really for you to build kind of loosely coupled solutions, solutions that are not only multi-tier, but it could also span environments, span clouds, span data centers, and compose those applications together fairly quickly. One of the common scenarios that we've seen customers do with the service bus is using the service bus to connect to some on-premise enterprise data, especially from different types of devices. So here's a classic scenario for you. Data that's within the enterprise environment that's back behind a firewall, some line of business system, some database system, some BI system, where there's some important data that we need access to, and we need access to that data from some new client experiences that we're building. What we can do is leverage the service bus relay, where the relay provides access to that data in a secure way. The relay essentially will give us access through the network firewall to that to a service that's running inside of our enterprise that's front-ending our data, enabling all kinds of other applications to go access it. So let me go ahead and show you just a quick example of what this would look like. So here I'm back over on my application. Let me go ahead and close out the Twitter Reader app. And I'll close a few of these windows, get them out of my way here. And let me show you a quick service bus example. So here what I have is a simple console application. And this console application is just going to host a WCF web service that I've written. This WCF web service is providing access to a famous SQL database that's installed locally on my machine, the Northwind database. And so it's just going to expose some of the customer information that's available in that database. So let me go ahead and just start that up. And here you can see the console application starting up. And this WCF service is actually configured to connect out to that service bus relay. And that's why you see this address here that doesn't use HTTP, but it actually has a URI syntax that refers to the service bus. From there, what I can do is have other applications that will then connect to that service. Here you can see I have this simple web application. In this web application, what I've done is I have a customer controller, and that customer controller is going to actually, let me pull up a service here. And with that controller, we're going to call into a service call into that customer service and go through the relay to pull in some of that data. So let me go ahead and just run this here. So this will start up in the compute emulator. And I've built this with ASP.NET MVC4 and using some of the new jQuery mobile support that's available through the mobile template. And so you can see this simple interface where I can just go browse through and view some of the customer information. And as I do that, again, we're going through the service bus for this data, and you can see the request being logged over here in the console. So as I go look at individual customers, start doing a query for all the customers, that kind of thing. And of course, because this application is built with the new jQuery mobile support within ASP.NET, what I can also do is leverage other devices to go view this data. So here I'll pull up a little iPhone simulator, and what I'll do is I'll just paste in that URL, and you'll notice that I'm able to go and access some of that same data. So combination of ASP.NET MVC here with Service Bus Relay, allowing us to access some of that data. Of course, I'm running everything here on my local machine, but this console application could actually be in an enterprise data center across the other side of the world and accessing that service and pulling in, retrieving some of the data. So a lot of flexibility in composing some of these different solutions using the relay support that's available through through the service bus. So we've talked about a number of these different application building blocks, and you can kind of get a sense for some of the themes. Providing some turnkey services you can just write some code against. You don't have to think about configuring and managing. Providing some client libraries for multiple languages, including things like the service bus, where we now have client libraries for every one of the languages we support with Windows Azure, PHP, Node, .NET, and so forth, as well as making those client libraries and a source available to you to go customize and change. There's several services that we haven't touched on today, including the identity service, including the content delivery network, including the new media services for delivering video content out that's either encoded or streamed content out. And so a number of other services that that we're exposing today, and a portfolio of these things that we're going to continue to expand on, both from Microsoft as well as from some of our partners. With this June release, we not only focused on improving the features and services and the capabilities exposed to you as developers or IT pros, but what we also did, we expanded the places where you can go get access to Windows Azure. And so Windows Azure is now commercially available in 89 countries and territories. So any developers or IT professionals within these countries and territories can sign up for a Windows Azure account, have a commercial account with Microsoft for using the Azure services. And of course, anybody can build solutions that are exposed across all the different data centers we talked about and exposed globally to customers on a worldwide basis. So we've seen a lot of new things that we've delivered with the Windows Azure Spring release. So we've seen how we're providing the flexibility for you to go run not only platform services and cloud services, but we're now extending the reach of Windows Azure to provide infrastructure as a service capability. What we want to do is provide a very flexible platform so you can start composing these things together and mix and match them as needed. You've also seen how we're embracing openness in a fundamental new way, enabling other development tools that you may use, enabling cross-platform support for the browser to be able to go manage and configure those services, and also making several of our SDKs and resources available as open source within the community. You also see how we're trying to build a really solid infrastructure and platform that you can rely on to go deliver solutions for your customers. So we're really excited about this release. I'm excited to see what you guys build a little bit later today in the hackathon and what you continue to build beyond then. If you haven't signed up for Windows Azure account, you want to learn some more about some of these services, just go up to windowsazure.com, click through some of the links, and all the resources are available out there. And with that, I know we're a few minutes over. We got started a few minutes late. I'll turn it back over to Jonathan to give us the details on the next steps. Thanks, everybody.